that has been the hardest part, trying to find a method or a way to incentivize followers to sign up to a mail list.
Hello and welcome back to this Rose the Show episode. Every other Monday, we invite a business owner, coach, or professional onto the podcast to get a free podcast audit and roast, where we deep dive into their current marketing, highlight areas that are holding them back from faster growth and monetization, provide them and you actionable steps you can start applying today to experience faster podcast growth. So sit back, grab your popcorn, and get ready as we roast this show. Hello and welcome back to Why Your Podcast Isn't Growing. My name is Anthony Wanneri.
I'm Tyga O'Shea.
And today we have
Adam from DNF1.
Perfect. Look, Adam, for a bit of context, I'd love to know, man, how long have you had the podcast live for?
First of all, thanks for having me on the show. Been a long time listener, first time joiner, so we appreciate the invite. And obviously the help that you guys are, I'm sure, will give me that will be invaluable. In terms of the show, so as we mentioned already, the show is called the DNF1 F1 Podcast. And I've been doing podcasting for nearly 4 years now. I think coming up to 4 years in a couple of weeks. So quite excited. And it's been a good journey so far, a big learning experience, but it's been so much fun being involved in a niche like podcasting. And weird how it's scary when you get started, but once you really get into a rhythm and you find your groove and your identity in the space, you never imagine your life without it to a degree. It just becomes second nature.
I love that, man. Dude, the passion is absolutely pouring out.
What an intro. Yeah, no, that's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
For sure. And I guess from your end, so you've had a show, you launched it from what you mentioned, nearly 4 years now. Yeah, it's 4 years. So 2020, you've got the podcast. In terms of the show itself, it's focused on the automotive space, right? Formula One and that kind of stuff. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so it was born out of the pandemic. A friend of mine and myself, we decided just to start talking about Formula One. We followed the sport for a very long time. And at that time, there wasn't too many Formula One podcasts around, at least not independent ones. And we thought, you know what? Might as well give it a go, put it out there, see who will listen. And yeah, here we are 4 years later.
I love that.
I love it.
A lot of good creative stuff started in lockdown. So Adam, for context for our listeners right now, where are you trying to go with the show? And for some context around your audience size as well, how many downloads did you get last month?
So in the last month, and bear in mind, of course, this is the off season, so downloads are going to be a little bit lower than what we're normally used to in season. But in the last month, it was around 4,500 to 5,000 in that range. And that's what we've been averaging the last year or so when the podcast has started to grow a little bit more. We've had, obviously, in tandem with a lot of news that's gone on. So I'm happy with that for the time being. However, I'll be brutally honest, I think I'm ready now to try and grow this show to the point where we can get more regular listeners, more people coming in to check the show out. Hopefully I've got it to a standard where the hardest part, obviously, is getting that exposure. But once people find us, they're going to be able to enjoy what we do and they'll stick around. Of course, that's totally up to them. But I want to be able to be in a position where I can give them every reason to stick around and be part of the DNF1 community.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's an important point you touched on. What we normally see when downloads have plateaued out, let's say, and it sounds like that's been the case for the last year or so, you've definitely got a good audience base there, right? But of course, if you're trying to break past that level, it's either a case of new listeners are finding the show, but also new listeners are leaving the show. Or it might just be a case of, because you are very niche, I wouldn't necessarily say this to other podcasters, but I think you've got one of the only shows in the space and certainly one of the big ones in the space. It might just be a case of your actual methods of getting more exposure are not optimized. So I guess it sounds as if maybe you think you could be doing more to really keep people around.
Would that absolutely be right? Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. When we spoke about this before coming on, one of the biggest issues I had was trying to stand out in that space. As I said, it's a very niche demographic. Of course, if you're not a Formula One fan, I'd be very surprised if this was a show, first of all, that you found. You may want to experience it, but it's obviously much harder to keep that audience and obviously new listeners coming in and new listeners staying there. That's always been the challenge. So yeah, hit the money. Oh, we'll hit the nail on the head, really.
Okay. So listeners find the show, but we can assume that listeners are also dropping off as well, right? Do you have any idea as to why that is? Obviously, it's a niche show. So for people looking, it should be fairly easy to find. Why do you think you maybe could be doing more to keep them around?
I think for me personally, The first thing I would look at is, what am I doing on the show that is potentially driving people away? Not to focus too much on the negative side of things, but obviously you want to have a hook to your show. You want to have an angle that makes you unique or independent from any other show that exists within your niche, which of course within Formula One is quite hard to do, because anybody that sets up a podcast related to Formula One, you're going to be expected the podcasters or the content creators to talk about Formula One. So that's really your hook already. So the first thing I would look at is, what am I doing during the show? Is the format right? Is the structure right? Are they too long? Are they not long enough? Do we have opinions that we say on the show that some of our listeners don't agree with? Because of course, it's not, if I can compare it to a football podcast, for example, where people would often set one up specific to a team. Your demographic is going to be exclusively to that one team. So you should be okay in having opinions that won't necessarily ruffle feathers the wrong way, or ruffle people up the wrong way, if you like. But with a Formula One podcast, you're kind of covering every single driver and every single team. So for example, I may say something positive about Lewis Hamilton, for example. Max Verstappen fans may listen to that and they might not like it and it might not stick around. So the challenge is not necessarily trying to please everybody, but it's to try and structure what you talk about in a way that keeps it interesting, keeps it fun, whether we talk about the races or talk about news topics, and just keeps people coming back, something that they can get involved with as well. And I think fan engagement has been another thing, just leading on to that next point, where I think that is something that we've struggled to really optimize for the show.
Got it. What does your ecosystem currently look like? I.e. for us, we have the podcast, we have our email list, and then we have our community, which is like our Get More Listeners Academy with the personalized one-on-one coaching. But for you, what does your ecosystem look like in terms of the show?
So in terms of the mail list, we currently don't have one. So that is one thing, I think, from listening to your show quite a few times, I've noticed that's probably something I really need to try and introduce, to try and help create, as I said, a DNF One community or a community of fans that support the show. At the moment, our ecosystem for our audience pretty much exists for anybody that interacts with the show on their favorite pod platform or on YouTube, because we do video versions of this podcast as well, and social media. So it's exclusively to social media.
And what social media specifically?
Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook to a degree, but it's mostly just advertising more than anything else. There's not too many occasions where we've really tried to drive that fan engagement. And I think the reason for that is because we've noticed that it is quite hard to achieve that when you don't have the largest following. I almost feel like you need the following and people to follow what you do, and then you can get that engagement afterwards. But obviously, I haven't mastered it yet, hence why I'm here. So talking to you, experts.
Got it, mate. And I guess out of those platforms, you mentioned Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I think there was one more that I might be missing.
TikTok, the upon.
TikTok, yeah. That's it. Out of those three platforms, which one's currently performing the best?
I would say probably Twitter, if I'm being brutally honest. In terms of attracting an audience or the exposure, probably Twitter.
Okay, how many followers have you currently got on Twitter?
Just under 1,000. So it's not bad, but obviously there's the audience and then there's the people that actively engage. It's probably a lot less than that out of that 1,000.
Okay, got it. Look, I think from your end, so you've got 1,000 people there, you got fewer than that who, of course, engage, and I think you tend to see that anyways. What's the current strategy when it comes to Twitter? How are you currently using Twitter in relation to your podcast?
At the moment, it's probably purely advertising and just, I suppose, retweeting on certain news pieces that come as and when they happen, just to give our takes. It's almost like any normal Twitter account where somebody's responding to certain events with their own takes on it and then just advertising whatever content they have. And usually that would come in the form of putting out links to the show on the audio platforms and then perhaps putting a subsequent one out for the YouTube video. Obviously, we don't do YouTube videos for every single show because it is quite time consuming, and I want to drive more traffic to the audio only versions because I feel like that's probably the better platform for our followers to tune into. Of course, they have different needs, but it's a podcast first and foremost, so the audio version should probably take priority.
Got it. And do you feel like you're doing a good job at the moment of converting followers into listeners, or are you currently just engaging your current listeners? What does that look like?
I would say it's more the latter, Anthony. I'm engaged with the current listeners. There is obviously, there is a nice group of people that do follow this show, and I'm really grateful to every single one of them that does. It really does make me feel good being able to share my passion with people like that. But of course, I want to grow that and I want to share it with more people. And that has been the struggle so far for me in these 4 years that I've been doing this.
Got it. Okay. And with Facebook, you just advertise it as well. From mine and Tig's point, we can move to like the retention piece in just a second. But I think you've got a solid base at the moment. I think that's great. That's really good. I've listened to the show. I think it's good quality and whatnot. But I think it's going to be okay. How do we keep this community engaged? How do we keep the community strong? If you're below, let's say, 2,000 downloads, then trying to build a community doesn't quite make sense, to be honest with you, because it's very hard to get enough volume of people to congregate to make the engagement worthwhile. But at 4,000 to 5,000 monthly downloads, that's pretty good. That's a good range to be sitting at. What I would suggest would just be like, okay, how do we build out a proper strategy when it comes to social media to turn more strangers into listeners? And there's going to be really two pieces. There's going to be, how do we turn more of your current audience on social media into actual listeners? And then how do we leverage your social media to find new audiences that don't know you exist just yet and turn them into listeners? Are you following me so far?
Yeah, 100%.
And Tige, do you know where I'm going to go with this? Because we had a client recently, right?
Where you're going with this, yeah. It's good that you say Twitter. To be honest, Adam, we haven't worked personally with too many sports shows, but from the ones that we have, and one actually is another English, it's a football podcast, Twitter does seem to be the place to go. So I'm glad that's validated in my head. And I would, this is a side note, but I would consider whether it's worth just going all in on that and just telling your listeners to just follow you on Twitter so that you go full steam ahead on Twitter and grow that, rather than maybe getting a few followers on TikTok, maybe a few on Instagram, that kind of thing. That's really a side note, though. The main thing, like Anthony said, is one, how do we convert followers into listeners? And two, how do we actually get more exposure on Twitter? How are you currently converting? I know you said you hinted that you're not really converting new followers into listeners. It's mainly just engaging your current. But do you have anything in place for turning people who follow you on Twitter into a listener?
So probably might need a bit more on this one. Are you referring to an incentive based approach where if you want something from your followers, you're offering them something in return for the patronage?
It's really just more of an open-ended question. So people who follow you on Twitter, what things do you do to actually get them over to the podcast? That could be posts you make, that could be messages you send to them, that could be something you have in your bio, whatever, if any.
I see. Okay, so in terms of the encouraging listeners or followers to go on to check out the podcast, it's mostly just posting stuff. Usually it would be the morning after a recording. So if we did a race, we'd probably put something out Monday morning. And I've been reviewing the best times to post on Twitter where there's the most interaction. And normally that would come, say, between 7 and 9 in the morning. If you're based in the UK, obviously people are traveling to work. They might, or whatever, on the public transport, they might flick the phone open. As you guys know, check Twitter. Oh, there you go. Adam's put something up from DNF1. It's a new podcast. I'll check that out. And obviously, subsequently, I might retweet that later in the day around 5-ish, just as another reminder in case some people miss it. There will be other times where we'll put the links for those posts, but there'll be other times as well where we might take clips as well from this episode. So I've started trying to incorporate AI into this as well, because shorts making is quite intensive in terms of the commitment to make them. So I've been able to use AI software that's allowed me to make short clips, but usually 30 to 45 second clips of these episodes to try and hook people in. So for example, I don't know if you guys follow Formula One, but Lewis Hamilton recently signed a deal to join the Ferrari team in 2025. Now, that's massive. That's the equivalent of, say, Lionel Messi going to Real Madrid. Like, it's huge news. And that was an opportunity for us to create clips talking about specific things within that episode to try and encourage anyone who's following us on DNF1 or anyone who's come across it to say, oh, I want to check the episode. That looks quite interesting. You know, they're talking about Lewis Hamilton, Ferrari. It's a big story. And the other thing that we do is that whenever we get a new follower on Twitter, and this is something that I learned from a friend of mine who hosts another F1 podcast. He told me to give this a go and see how that works. When they follow us, we'll follow them back and then we'll send them a DM just to make sure that it's not like a one-sided conversation, and just let them know that they're valued and that we appreciate them. And we just say, hi, you know, X person or person X, if you like, thanks for following the show. Did you know that we have a podcast? If you don't, here's the links to it on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or a few other podcast platforms where they may want to check us out from. Have a listen to the show. And if you think that we're worthy, we'd appreciate you leaving us a 5-star review. That would really help us out. And it allows us to get the podcast out to more audiences that may not have heard of us yet, and just usually end it with that.
You know what, Adam? I quite like that. I think this, unfortunately, I'm struggling to find places to really roast, and it's more just going to be just tweaking a few things because you're already in a decent spot. I think what I like is that you're reaching out to followers and actually letting them know about the podcast. Something that many people glaze over is they might have a podcast page or even just a personal page, but they post about the podcast a lot, and they assume that the followers know about the podcast, which makes sense, right? But we know what social media is like. It's, I think on average, it's like 10% of your followers see any given post or something like that, right? Don't quote me on that. It depends on the platform.
You're probably right in that regard, so it's fine.
Yeah, so actually taking the extra step to actually actively let them know about the podcast, that is huge. I've got two questions, one on the posting side, one on the DM side. On the DM side, how many responses, in fact, if you know your response rate, that might be a better question. But just generally, I'm just trying to get a gauge for how well do these DMs do.
I haven't been doing it for too long. So this is probably, it would be much easier to measure this over time. And maybe it's something in the future, I might drop you an email to let you know how it's gone when I've had enough time to really get a reasonable estimate. But I would say at this point in time, since I've been trying it for the last month or so, I would say about 50% at least tend to respond either to acknowledge the message and say, oh, thanks, I checked your show out, or they're just a regular listener anyway, but they do say, oh, I've given you a rating or a review. Thanks so much for letting me know on the show. And usually what I tend to do as there is in return of people giving me a nice review, I'll always offer to give them a shout out on the show, especially the 5-star ones, because it's a nice way to try and incentivize followers and listeners in one way to support the show and help us expand and grow, which is obviously what we're trying to do.
Adam, you're saying a lot of words that me and Tig like to hear. Provide value to your audience. Incentivize them to take action. Those are all great things. And I think if I had to like pinpoint in terms of, hey, this system that you've got going on, it will work. I think there's definitely room for improvement. So it'll be interesting to try one thing. A few changes, actually. The first would be with the message that you're sending to people, sending multiple links oftentimes overwhelms people. There's a platform called PodFollow. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Is that similar to Linktree?
Kind of. So it's similar to Linktree in terms of it'll take people to different places depending on what platform they're on. If someone's on a Mac, it'll send them to Apple. If someone's on a Windows, it'll send them to Google or it'll send them to Spotify. If someone's on their phone or an Apple Android, it'll send them to their respective directories. So rather than saying pick which one, it'll just go to the main one for them and there's less links, so it's a bit clearer. The second thing I would say and suggest would be try not pitching the show and then send the link straight away. Try asking for permission first and then sending the link once you have a yes or a no. This will, number one, it will act as insurance for people who like you and want to engage with you, but they want to feel like they're being like pushed to take a certain action. When you drop the link, it diffuses you asking in the first place. The second thing I'd say, it also means that the people who respond to you, it opens up another opening for conversation. It means that they are engaged. So I'll tweak the message to be, rather than, hey, here, we also have a podcast, I will tweak it to say something along the lines of, hey, name, saw you recently following, thank you. Just curious to know, we've got a podcast called XYZ about benefits. Would you be open to me sending a link over to you? You know, our audience tend to love it. If not, that's just really cool. Just say, no, Adam, you suck. Something like that, right? That's the response we want from people, that little chuckle there. It's light, you're asking for permission, and most of the time people will say yes. And because they themselves have said yes, the percentage of them that then go on to do it, because there's like a psychological trick known as consistency bias, means that they're now far more likely to listen to the show. And then if they don't let you know, a couple of days later, you can just pop in, hey, just curious, I'm watching, I'd love to get some feedback, we're really trying to figure out how we can improve it. And what were your thoughts? You get a chance to look it out. And it gives you that entry because that conversation has already been started. What are your thoughts on that?
No, that sounds pretty fair. And you're absolutely right. I think, not to paraphrase it too much because it's really good advice, but as soon as you were mentioning like inundating someone with a link straight away, it almost reminds me of that friend. And we've all got them. There's always that one friend that you haven't seen in about 10, 15 years from school normally. And they'll get back in touch with you. And within about 2 or 3 messages, there's the pyramid scheme.
That's yeah, not we... why I expected you to take that. But you
know, well, that's the PG version, but there you go. But it's still true, though. It's still true.
And yeah, you're right. What I was thinking the same thing as Anthony said. To be honest, I was actually surprised that you said about a 50% rate, positive rate. I was going to say, if it was less than that, yeah, I would definitely suggest switching it up. I think as you're early on, I would assume, because what we found, we've done this with a bunch of clients, bunch of different niches, and asking for permission, what we just call it a permission-based pitch, which is the message Anthony just described, it goes down a lot better with people that don't know you that yet, for the reasons we've just discussed. Whereas just sending the link, just assuming they want it, and all these things, it doesn't always go down that well. It sounds like it's actually been working pretty well for you, so it would be worth experimenting and maybe testing half and half with this way and keep the current way, see which one performs better. If I had to assume, I would think that because you're not getting that many new followers, like the Twitter isn't growing massively, like you said, you've got about 1,000, the people that are following you are, maybe they are aware of you and they're a bit more warm. So the kind of, the more pushy, the more assumptuous message with the links has maybe done all right so far. But at scale, I'm not sure it would hold up from previous experience with different shows.
No, I think that's fair.
It would be good to test.
Yeah,
However,
I think that's fair, yeah.
But at the same time, you're actually doing really well with it at the moment. So I don't want to just say just bin it off. I think it would be a case of just testing 50-50. That brings us on, though. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to agree with you. Sorry, I keep interrupting. But no, you're absolutely right. And as I said, it's early days that I've been doing this. So I don't think it's a fair metric to say, oh, yeah, we should definitely push with this. But I want to see how it plays out. But as I said, or as Anthony rightly pointed out, I think that's much better approach. If I was a follower and, you know, I followed someone that I didn't even know they had a podcast, I probably wouldn't want to be inundated with links all of a sudden because you don't know this person. You're certainly not going to trust this person. It could be anything. So, no, I think that's a really good strategy and it's something I'll definitely look to incorporate for newer followers as I try to grow this this pod.
Well, that brings us on to the next point, right? So how do we actually grow your Twitter in a more scalable way so that you can get more exposure on the podcast? So you mentioned you're doing the short form clips and you are posting just to notifying people about the episodes in the morning after and then again in the evening. How well are those going on average?
Again, it's still quite new, so it's really hard to get a sort of figure that would suggest to me that if this is successful or not. My strategy at the moment is, as I said, with this AI software that I've been using, it's made it a lot easier for me to do this than it would be trying to do it manually. I've been able to make usually around 4 or 5 different clips of the episode, but obviously it's not a case of posting everything all at once. It will just be maybe 1 or 2 a day in conjunction with doing it on YouTube for YouTube Shorts as well, because I know that's a medium that's really been booming since TikTok has been a thing. And that would normally be my strategy. Just post a couple of those every day, just whoever's checking it out at the time. As you pointed out earlier, about 10% of the average audience that you have on social media find your content when you're posting. So for me, it's no point trying to put all my content out in one hit. I have to try and strategically put it out at different times where there's going to be different opportunities for engagement. And hopefully from that, maybe 10% of that audience that checks that out will be able to see, oh, they've got a podcast, I might want to check that out, depending on what the hook is. Of course, it's like a story like Hamilton to Ferrari is quite an easy hook for Formula One content, but then there are other days where the news might not be so exciting, so it's much more difficult. You have to find other ways to get your audience hooked.
I know you've only just started it. On average, would you say you're gaining many new followers or getting a lot of engagement on these posts?
It's hard to say at this point. I would say we are getting some, but perhaps not the desired effect, if I'm brutally honest.
Okay. Well, why do you think that is?
At the moment, I'm not quite sure. This is why I want to experiment with it a little bit to see if there are patterns for clips or methods that are actually doing well. If I try and set some KPIs for this to see what's working well and what isn't, and then try to stick to the former and keep pushing with that. But at this point in time, because it's still quite early days, it would be hard for me to... I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, if that makes sense. I don't want to say, oh, this definitely ain't working or this is working. I need to try a little bit longer to see what definitely works, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say, Adam, again, I appreciate your data-driven approach to this. It's the same as we do it. You're making it very hard for us to roast. There's really no roasting going on. I think from our, and mainly from all of our clients' experience, short-form content is all the rage, but it doesn't really seem to work too well to actually get new listeners. I mean, for you, how often have you seen a short form clip and actually gone and checked out that podcast?
Yeah, not often, but I think that says more. I don't know if that says more about me than the general demographic out there. And most of the short form clips that I'll see are for shows that I already follow or I'm already engaged with, rather than brand new ones, for example.
Right. And why do you think that might be? Because I would agree. I only ever see short form clips for people that I'm already very aware of. I don't really, ones that are new to me don't really get pushed out to me. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I think it comes down to a trust thing. You commit to a show, you enjoy it, the content there is really good. And sometimes you just like to see clip versions of it because it's just another way of reliving it again, or watching something back, or just something you might have missed from that show. With newer shows, I don't know. I just feel that this is a hard one. There are always things or metrics associated with new content that you might check out, whatever that is. Like, for example, being a football fan as well, I'm always going to look at things related to Arsenal Football Club, for example, because that's my team. And anything related to do with that, if I see a clip, it's like, yeah, I might check that out. But there's always that familiarity you want with something that really gets you hooked and engaged. If I see something that's completely brand new to me, chances are I'm probably not going to click on it. I'll just scroll past and ignore it. It's a hard question to answer. Yeah.
I think you just answered it, man. I think you just answered it. I understand that you might not be sure if that's representative of most people, that they would be more likely to just scroll past. But statistically, I can say from our experience, from basically everyone that we've worked with, it is. And short form content doesn't actually tend to work too well as a way of getting new followers and new exposure on the show. Or it might be a bit of a supplement to keep it more top of mind for existing followers. But again, that's only the 10% that see it, right? So all in all, we haven't really found it be too an effective way of actually growing. I think that, coupled with the fact your Twitter's your speciality, I would definitely wonder whether that is the best thing suited to that platform. Like you say, again, you have to test. So I'm not saying you should just drop it now. It's worth continuing to track it, and if maybe if something takes off, is worthwhile. But what I would be more keen is, so you're in the sports niche and you're on Twitter. To me, that honestly screams polarizing content in written form, rather than trying to match videos to a platform that isn't really video based. And of course, we're talking about sports, right? So I would actually lean into the polarizing thing. I know you mentioned again at the start that you don't want to be polarizing or controversial, but actually creating strong reactions is how you grow on social media, really, because this is what pushes it out, right? The reason you never see clips from shows you don't know is because it's not getting pushed out, because no one's engaging with it. But things that elicit strong reactions, people do engage with it, right, by nature. So is that something you've ever experimented with?
Honestly, no, because as we've already established, I'm the type of content creator where I like to say it as I see it, but I do like to try, well, not necessarily balance out the argument artificially, because that wouldn't be fair and authentic to the listeners. It would almost be a little bit fake. But I've always been a little bit timid about the idea of trying to create content or even short form clips that deliberately polarize the audience as a hook, or to try and get them engaged, whether they like it or they don't. More through fear, I suppose, of how the reaction would go if a lot of people disagree or don't like what you say, having that thick skin as a content creator. But then I see a lot of people on social media, whether they deliberately do this or they genuinely believe in these opinions and they just happen to be controversial or polarizing, they put that content out there and it does drive engagement. So that's always been quite challenging for me, especially in an F1 niche where you're trying to cover everybody and give them the benefit of the doubt. But sometimes it's a bit harder to do that for some than it is for others.
Honestly, Adam, I appreciate you being really open about that, because I think a lot of people would shy away or make excuses, but you're very self-aware. And to be honest with you, mate, in terms of what route to go, there's not right or wrong. It's just, hey, look, what level of discomfort? Because if it's fear, for example, if our goal is to get to 10,000 monthly downloads, and to do that, we'll have to figure out a way to use social media the right way to channel that you're following into the podcast. And if the only thing that's holding you back from approaching social media and playing the game in a fun way, doesn't mean being a dick, it just doesn't mean trying to be fake, it just means being authentically yourself and sharing your opinion. If we're trying to be a thought leader, even think about the main anchors. If you think about YouTube, some YouTube presenters on football or sports are bigger than national presenters on TV. Why? Because they share their genuine opinion, their thoughts authentically. And the real question is, are you willing to sit in the discomfort of potentially getting backlash, which you definitely will just by nature of sharing your opinion online? Are you willing to go through that discomfort and semi-pain to push the boundaries and get your show the reach it deserves and to get your voice and your authority built up? That's really the question. Or are we going to let fear of the pain or fear of what if be the thing that holds us back from actually getting the spotlight that you deserve? And again, it's not like cheating or hacking, it's just being, sharing your opinions, just raw and then genuine take. That's, like you already pointed out, that's the main piece that I see that could, sabotage is the wrong word, but that could hold you back from really going all in and making social media work. Because it's tough, man. It's fucking tough.
Oh, no, it really is. And it's funny you should say that, because I already do get some backlash from some people already within my existing audience. And I'll give you a prime example. And I completely ignored this person on social media because I thought they had just been a dick. But basically, they said to me, oh, the biggest guys or the biggest facade about the DNF 1F1 podcast is the fact that Adam runs around like he's a Ferrari fan, but yet we all know he's a Lewis Hamilton fan, and at the earliest opportunity he would fillet him. And I'm like, okay, but why? What problem have you got with the show? But at the time I just looked at it and I thought, no, I'm not going to engage with this, because just a guy being an absolute idiot, and there was nothing to gain, there'd be nothing to gain from it. They're offering no insight into the show. They just don't like the fact that I must have said something nice about Hamilton for whatever reason. And it wasn't even deliberately polarizing, whatever it was. And it was at that point when I looked at that and I thought, ah, do you know what? This is the one thing I'm not envious of much bigger content creators, is they probably are subjected to this all the time. And you have to develop a thick skin for it. It's hard, I'm not going to lie. It did suck to see that. But
welcome to the game,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be that way. As I said, it's much easier when you have a demographic specifically dedicated to one facet of an industry, like a team, for example. Even if in F1, you can do that with a team or a driver. A friend of mine, I'm going to shout out the show because obviously I don't want to be that kind of guest, but his show is dedicated to Lewis Hamilton in particular. And as a member of the Afro-Caribbean community that exists within Britain, there's a huge following for that, because for someone like Hamilton, he's someone that represents so much diversity in a sport that has not really had it for a long time. So, but it's about putting forward that promotion for all those good things that diversity is bringing to Formula One, that obviously someone like me wouldn't probably understand to such a degree as others would. But so many people will hate them for having opinions on a specific driver that means so much to them. But they just ride it and take it in their stride. And they're like, that's all right, we don't care, we're just going to keep shouting it to the rooftops anyway. And they do so well. And I love that about them. I almost wish I was as brave up to this point as they are. And that's something perhaps I need to consider. Finding the right balance, of course. I don't want to deliberately trigger people, but just being myself to a point where it will allow my show to grow and not have to worry too much about any sort of backlash. Because you're never going to please everyone, are you?
Yeah. And I guess that leads us to the next question, which is, you mentioned how, let's say a year ago, you started to realize, social media is not working very well. I would love the show to grow, but it's been stagnant for the year, right? If a year ago you started engaging the right way, sharing your genuine thoughts, not holding back, being fearless, but still feeling the pain because you're human, that's going to happen. But pushing through that, and now, 6 months later, you're now used to that feeling. And you can see it and dissociate. Sometimes you'll engage for a bit of fun. Sometimes you'll pull back. That's going to happen. It's natural. If you were to start doing that, let's say a year ago, where do you think you'd be today in terms of the social media growth? And then, of course, that translates into the actual growth of your show overall. If you were a bit more fearless, if you took that step forward and had the courage to explore that further, where do you think you'd be now with the podcast?
Based on what we discussed, I would like to think that it probably would have grown quite a bit more than it has done. Again, it's just finding that right balance of not deliberately trying to trigger people, but playing the game, I think, as you rightly put it earlier on. So yeah, I imagine that it would have grown quite a bit more than it has done at this point. As I said, I'm quite proud of what I've done so far, but I do want more. There is a desire for this to be bigger and better. I believe in myself. I believe in my co-hosts that do this with me every so often. And we do have fun with it, and I want that to continue. And if that means potentially putting out content that allows us to be open and honest, that may sometimes polarize our audience, then that's the game, isn't it?
That is the game. And I guess to that, because you mentioned the kind of like deliberate part, for anyone listening right now, please don't be an absolute dick on social media and be one of those guys who's going after cheap shots. I think that is inauthentic and it's just not fun. It's not great. I think it's more so, think about the number of posts that you see that you disagree with. Think about the numbers of posts that you see that you have strong opinions on. There's a lot. whether we like it or not, humans, we're opinionated. You go through social media and you have some thoughts. Every time, Adam, this is a little game, a way to gamify this for yourself. Anytime you just have a raw thought, you see a post you don't quite agree with, just share your honest thought unfiltered. Repost that thing, share your honest thoughts unfiltered. It can be agree, it can be disagree, whatever it is. But it needs to be those moments that you already naturally have where you just have that thought like, that's complete nonsense. What the hell is this guy talking about? Or it could even be in a comment section, or it could be a post you're like, oh, but he hasn't talked about this part. All of those little bits, those are moments of you being authentic but sharing your opinion on something that we know is going to grab engagement. And being even more intentional, following specific people, and this is what, like, in psychology is creating the us versus them, right? Us versus them. Finding other people, this is really, talk about getting uncomfortable. Finding other communities or pockets where you either heavily agree with the thought leaders in your space, if you want to call them that, but the big names in your space, and other ones that you might not agree with that also very loud and out there. Find those people. Find 5 to 10 of them. Follow them. And then each time they make a post, ask yourself, what do I actually think about this? And then retweet it to them, sharing your genuine thoughts. That is the fastest way when it comes to growing on social media you could probably find, because again, you're leveraging someone else's audience who's already built up, sharing your opinion to either back them or to kind of have the us versus them. And that creates massive engagement. People will hate, people will love, and that's part of the game.
And well, you can definitely tell we're not Twitter growth experts by any means, but what Anthony just said, it particularly applies to your niche, right? Sports, where it's naturally polarizing, and Twitter, which is naturally more tech-so than like clips and stuff like that. That is going to gamify things, but it's also going to spur you along and not just rely on your own post getting out there. You can just piggyback over other people's audiences as well and reach a much wider base of F1 fans to start building that following a bit more as well.
And just to add on as well, I think this will make, because your personality type, I think this will help. You mentioned about how you like to articulate your opinions and give the two sides. You can do it if you want, but I would say rather than trying to articulate the other side, just put a lot of emphasis on articulating your opinion in a fantastic way, in the best way possible, in the most concise way possible, in a way where the argument is kind of social, where it's like bulletproof. That's the kind of stuff, not going crazy, but like that's the kind of things you want, because then it's still you being authentic. But rather than you trying to please both sides, it's just you placing an argument forward that's very well thought out in a very concise way. That's really what you want to be doing. Does that make sense, mate?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's funny because one of the things I've really tried to work on, and I hope that I've improved since I started doing podcasting, is trying to articulate what I need to say, but try not to say too much. And sometimes I might go off tangent a little bit and you have to try and pull it back and it's a bit crazy. But you're right. It's about getting that message across in the right way. And all sounds good. It sounds fun. I'm looking forward to giving this a go and seeing how it goes.
I love it. So look, dude, in terms of recap, I think in terms of where you are right now, great job so far getting to 4,000 to 5,000 monthly downloads. We want to break past that current growth. So there's two things you want to do. Leverage the current audience you already have on Twitter by reaching out to members who engage with your current content and who follow you recently. Let them know about the podcast with a permission-based pitch. Hey, we have a podcast. Are you open to be sharing with it? If you're not, that's totally cool. That kind of vibe. Then the second piece is going to be picking 5 to 10 top profiles within your industry, thought leaders, people tweeting, sharing their opinions. You want to follow them, and then you want to make sure on a regular basis you're replying in the comments to them or retweeting their post, giving your honest opinion and take that's well articulated and concise to get that exposure for your brand and your show and get your name out there. Because, dude, I listen to you. I'm not surprised you've got 4,000 to 5,000 monthly downloads because you speak well, you're articulate, you're intelligent. You've got a very high level of awareness.
Yeah.
Just let more people see that, man. There's going to be people who are dicks and be like, oh, F this, F that, but like, who cares? We see you. We see you, and our listeners can hear what you're like. So it doesn't really matter what other people who don't actually know you think or believe. It only matters what you know, who you are, and the audience who know you and know who you are. That's the people that we give the love and attention to and be the spokesman for those who have those opinions but might be you 2 years ago and were worried about sharing them. And that's how I view it. Game of fight for yourself.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And yes, my history's podcast is usually about trying to be everybody's friend, but you can never quite achieve that in some spaces. But as I said, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy what I do. And obviously, I want to try and grow the community and engage with them as much as I possibly can. Have a larger social media presence. I think that's definitely one of the number one things I knew before going in. I'm glad that you guys have ratified that back to me, that that's something I do need to make sure ensure to help this show grow. One question I did want to ask you both, because I've heard a couple of your roasting shows with other content creators. What do you guys make of the description of the show and the cover art and stuff like that? Is that on the right track? Because I did try to amend that before coming onto this a little while back, just to based on what I'd learned from what you guys were talking about before, just to make sure that it was it was better than what I'd put before. And I like
that. So cheeky. Yeah. That's so cheeky. We literally, before we got on, we of course reviewed the call. We review every application. And I was like, yeah, this description's solid. Wow, the cover art looks really good, Tyke, doesn't it? That's so funny because I was like, ah, oh, okay, so you've changed it. Yeah, dude, I think the
show itself, the downloads speak for themselves, really. But just to confirm, the cover art looks great, man. It looks really high quality, professional. It stands out. It looks clean is the most important thing. The show description, you have got a call to action. You have got a hook. You start by saying, if you love Formula One, this podcast is for you. That's brilliant. I'm reading the show description, so, you know, actually for people listening, the show description says, if you love Formula One, this is the podcast for you. Adam, Courtney, and Lee cover all the races, incidents, and breaking news in the world of Formula One with their own blend of expert analysis, quote-unquote expert, and humor. Please join us while we rant, joke, get technical, and discuss the latest developments from the world's fastest, sexiest, and most exciting motorsport. And then at the bottom, you have, please take the time to review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods, that kind of stuff. But then you have the links to the socials. Overall, man, this is great. If I wanted to be really nitpicky, I would say the show description is made for new listeners, right? No one's going to review the show if they haven't even listened yet and are just reading the description for the first time if they haven't met you, right? So what I would say is I would replace that call to action with a call to action to either listen to the show. Or if this works for you, I know it might not because your content is probably very timely. If there's fan favorite episodes that are long-standing and would still hold up now, even if they're old, you can send them to that. The reason why that works particularly well is because it removes the decisions of them scrolling through and trying to decide which episode. Again, that might not translate into your niche because it's very topical, timely content. And if not, then just a call to action to go and actually listen to the show would be a lot more streamlined, I would say. But overall, again, I'm being nitpicky. It's definitely not hurting the growth of the show. The description is really good. The cover is really clean. The content is great. Again, like, you're really polished and really articulate, even not as F1 fans for me and Anthony. I think the main thing is going to be, just taking that level up on social media to attract a wider audience, right, in the world of F1, and then actually convert them on the back end, which you've already made a good start with the DMs. And I think you can experiment with the stuff we said, and that will really help as well. And then after that, I know you mentioned about the email list as well. We could probably do a whole nother episode about that. But I think ultimately, once you start growing on social media and the podcast is growing in, even better time to bring in the email list. The only thing that trips people up when it comes to that is they just say, sign up to my mailing list or kind of something like that. You always want to incentivize people. So you want to give people a reason to sign up. When that time comes, I think you're going to do a great job of that. But yeah, for now, I'll just go all in on the Twitter.
That has been the hardest part, trying to find a method or a way to incentivize followers to sign up to a mail list. What can I offer them that I haven't already done? Some people say, oh, set up a Patreon, you can have extra content, but there's only so many hours in the day. And anyone that follows this show or follows my show will know that there's been a lot that's been posted. So there's only so much content you can put out that's an extra incentive as well. I think, what on earth would I have to talk about? But that sounds great. And I really appreciate that because first and foremost, it confirms that what I'm doing is good. As a starting point, obviously there are things to go on. The one thing I learned the most, and even before I came on the show, and I'm glad that when we talked about this, Anthony, when we were emailing each other about this, I think it's really important for anyone that's starting to show out. And if you're entering a niche like sports or film or music, anything that has a diverse core of different content creators talking about the same thing, you want to try and stand out or be better, study your competition. Because that has got me, so far. Sorry, I'm not trying to take your jobs away from you guys. Honestly, study the competition. If you see the best, even if it's not the independent people, but the mainstream shows, like, for example, in the UK, like the BBC F1 podcast or P1 with Matt and Tommy, just to shout a few out that are really big. There's a reason those guys are so successful, what they do. And if you take away little lessons of what they do, even if it's the smallest things, and apply that to your own show or put your own blend on it, it really helps you out so much. And that's what I've done over the last 3 or 4 years. Study the competition, embrace what they do, make it your own. And I'm getting some listeners, so I must be doing something right. Not to be too arrogant, of course.
No, dude.
No, smash it, man. You know why me and Anthony are laughing? Because for people listening to this right now, they're going to be listening after we've released an episode talking about this very specific thing. Why comparing yourself to others is actually a good thing in the context of podcasting, right? So they're going to think that you've just listened to that episode and you're regurgitating that. But the funny thing is, we actually recorded that episode this morning. So we just made a whole episode about the point that you just made and brought up there, and saying how all the successful podcasters that kind of shared voice notes on a show and that kind of thing, which I have no doubt will be you one day as well, one of the things that is common between them is they review, they see what else is out there in the niche, right? And they get ideas to see how can they make theirs better and all that kind of stuff. I just love the point that you just brought that up, right?
Because I'm just saying,
very in alignment.
Yeah, I'm just that big of a fan. I already know your content before you guys have even published it.
That's what it is.
That's how much I love the show.
Epic. Look, Adam, it has been absolutely awesome, mate. I guess there'll be one last thing, and not to keep this too long, this is just from us to you, really. Your ranking on Spotify for Formula One podcast, I think you are number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're number 12, so you've just made page one, and that's of course for the UK search. But on Apple, you're not actually ranking on for Formula One. So you for Formula One with the number one, or Formula One. Let's have a look at this one. Let's see, this here shows, and you're not ranking on page one either for Formula One with the actual letters. So I would say go through some of your old episodes. And where you can add Formula One, the actual wording, just have it in bracket and just go through them and just add that in. And that will help you rank higher in Spotify, and it'll help you rank higher in Apple as well. Like, we'll see those numbers climb pretty quickly within a couple of weeks. So I'd definitely say that's just a little bonus from our end. Other than that, mate, I'd love to know from your end, anything you'd like to leave the listeners right now in terms of those who might be skeptical to get their podcast audited and get their show breaking past the glass ceiling and through the plateaus.
As I said, if you guys are, I can understand people might feel a little bit skeptical or worried about the stuff. You join an email list and you see this, you think, oh, does it sound too good to be true? Honestly, guys, not that I would always be endorsing loads of things, but I would definitely encourage people to reach out to you guys if they need tips or advice, or even if it's just to get those free audits that you guys do. I know that's how I got involved into it, and it was really helpful. I've learned a lot from talking to you guys and coming on this show. And if you are a little bit nervous about it, just give it a go. You've got nothing to lose, guys. Honestly, you have so much to gain from it. So just have a go. If I can do it, so can you.
My man.
Legend, Adam. Appreciate it. It's been a great session. I'm excited to see the show climb.
Thank you.